This sounds was recorded on October 15th, 1962. Is that?
Did you hear something?
No. I just said I'm very well.
Oh, good.
Excuse me.
Proofs
for evidence, which has been in the past a very important thing to you, as still is to some extent. This is something, reincarnations, that is not going to be so easy to be able to prove. It will be of great interest to you, as I told you. I cannot make you realize it from the point of view that you could have realized survival and the continuation of life as has been experienced previously through spiritualistic activities and mediumship in particular. This is an entirely different thing altogether, and I cannot anticipate that you shall be able to say, oh yes, I know this is definitely so. This is something which, as I warned you a long time ago, you have to accept on faith. Some of it may ring true to your ears, even though you cannot confirm it, but nevertheless, there will be a feeling of truth for which you will be conscious within yourself. But there will be certain things which you will find much more difficult to comprehend, and I do feel in consequence that you must accept that which you can accept, and not necessarily discard that which you cannot accept, but you have to leave it in advance as something which may well be from your point of view, but you cannot sort of feel sure and confident about it. And therefore, when I go into details in regard to yourself and friends, I know that I'm going to be up against not a brick wall, because you could never be that, but I'm going to be up against certain difficulties from your point of view, because you will say, oh, this is tremendously exciting and very interesting, but I can't feel that it can be so. So I warned you a long time ago when I spoke to you in Sydney, so this was going to be like this.
Yes. Oh, I realize that, Dr. Chair. It's not like you remember things that you
do. You see, truth is truth, Rose.
Yes.
And whether one likes it or not, or certain aspects of it, or whether certain things are said by me in regard to certain other persons known to you, sometimes dear to you, you may feel, oh well, this is tremendously interesting and I feel sure it's true, but I mustn't keep this recording, or I mustn't let anyone else hear it, because they won't understand it, and in fact it's so personal in a sense that they might even be furious, you might say.
That's true.
I'm not going to suggest that you keep anything that you do not want to keep or you feel perhaps is unwise to keep. That truth is never always palatable to some people, that is to you, but you have friends who just will not accept should they hear these recordings. In fact, we think the whole thing is a terrible hoax.
Yes, I know.
And it's very perturbing to me, in a sense, because I do not want you to be in any way embarrassed by these recordings, and I do not know now whether I should be a little circumspect and sort of be a little careful what I say in regard about certain persons or people. Because, you see, I've got to be careful from this point of view, because I know you, Rose. I know you'll say to yourself now, there's some things on that darn tape I would like to keep very much, but there's some things I don't want to keep at all. And in consequence, you'll be in such a dither as to whether you should keep a tape as it is, or in some way try to erase part of it. And I know your headaches in regard to this tape business. So I'm wondering if I ought to be a little more cautious.
No, please, more kindly, be your natural self and just tell me what you have to
do. But I believe there is some method by which you can, if you want, retain certain things on a tape and erase other things. So that might solve your problem.
The only thing that I was afraid of was, you see, when you came as Lucillus, and then I discovered you were as Dr. Marshall. Now, I can quite understand the reason of things, why this is done, but if I say that...
Well, for the sake of the recordings, Rose, would you prefer in future that I announce myself as Lucilius and retain that name throughout the rest of these sittings?
Yes, please.
So that then you could keep the recordings and you could play them to people and no one would be any the wiser.
That's right.
So from tonight onwards, there's not much point now since I've already spoken to you as Marshal, that in the future I will reassume the guise of Lucilius as of previous sittings, so that there will be no sort of fear that people say, well, how can this be? It's obviously not.
No, it's only for novices.
Well, that's why I wanted to get this straight with you tonight, because I know that this has rather worried you and perturbed you because of the possibility of some people who might listen to some tapes you want to play to them say, oh, well, now this is most strange, and so on.
Yes, you see, they, so many of them, especially the Roman Catholics, they think that it's an evil thing. And impersonations and so on, you see. But a person like me who's ill, yes?
I'm afraid, whatever one came as, if it were a road sweeper, they'd still not accept it, but still, certain people at least. But I'm very anxious to help you if I can, to help your friend particularly, Louise.
Yes, I know.
Because I feel sure she could be benefited greatly by truth. And there's so much good in her, which has manifested itself in various ways, but there's so much that if it were eradicated from her makeup and her nature, and also with the change certain of her views, she would be a much happier woman and a much more sensible personality and one who could be much freer, to free her from some of these rather silly things that bar her progress. As we shall have to see.
It's rather difficult for her to. She never asks for any tape.
She's not interested. In any case, I think that she's afraid of it, and also I think she's to some extent afraid of being persuaded against what she considers her will. And I think she's interested to a point, particularly if it's on a low level. I mean, if I came through or some soul came through and sent me a very important message for Louise and this in regard to her personal affairs and material well-being, she'd probably pick up her ears and say, oh yes, let's hear it.
Yes.
But anything to do with her spiritual welfare or anything that might cut across her firm convictions in regard to her religious beliefs, that's an end story altogether.
When you come up against human beings, really, it's a very, very
difficult. By the way,
yes?
When did you sit again? I'm not going, did you then? I was just wondering when you were sitting again. Is it Thursday?
Yes,
Thursday. Unless we sit again on Wednesday and Thursday. I don't know. It depends what road you want.
Would you like me to sit on Wednesday?
Well, it's entirely
Aunt Amelia coming. They won't stay late. Yes, Wednesday and Thursday will be a good idea.
Yes, well then from Wednesday.
Yes.
I will resume my sponsor.
Yes.
My Lucilius personality.
Yes.
Put it like that.
Yes. All right, Doctor dear. Shall we stop now?
Oh, well, nothing can stop.
Oh, I see.
I was trying to trying to go over this ground because I think it might help you. I know that you've been not exactly embarrassed, but you felt a little uncertain within yourself about the recordings now because of my revealing myself as Marshal, you see, whereas previously you were able to play the tapes to people as a singer, and now if you play them as Marshal, there's going to be confusion. So that's why I think if I get this settled now, that from Wednesday I come as Lucilius and retain that personality, I think it will solve that problem.
Yes, I think that's a very good idea.
Of course, there are certain factors which I don't think you quite comprehend. You see, I had intended later date, that is, to reveal myself to you as Marshal. I had not intended that you should go on indefinitely under the impression that I was a serious, which in a sense, of course, I am. But what I mean by that is that I had intended at a later date to tell you, you see, that now having fished for me bags, strange as it may seem, it has not exactly interfered, but it has made a subtle difference, which you may not be aware of. But you see, when you pierce an identity, then the thing that happens there is that almost automatically, one becomes, as it were, on the plane of thought of that personality. In other words, when I was coming to you completely fresh, as it were, as a Silius, I was asserting the Silius part of myself. Now you have pierced my identity as Marshal. When I come, I find it that more difficult to reach completely or assert the Lucilius personality. Do you understand?
Yes, I understand.
So when I come in first, well, another reason why I wanted to get this straightened out tonight, that I would prefer, you see, with your permission, to come to you as a serious, not only for sake of your friends and your clips, but from my own point of view, while I am communicating with you as Marshal, that aspect of my old self, that is the last incarnation of Marshal, is stronger. But if I can come to you at the beginning of the sitting as a serious, I can push the Marshal side, the Marshal part of me, away. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course it makes sense. Certainly.
I suppose in a way you could almost say it's like an actor being on stage. When he's in his dressing room, he's making up and preparing. Gradually, the personality of the actor gradually is lost, and as he makes up and as he prepares for his performance, he assumes the personality of the character that he's portraying. Do you understand that, don't you?
Yes, of course I do.
Well, the funny thing is, and it is in a sense very keen, you know, I don't think people realize on your side there is a kinship, you might say, between communicating entities and acting. And that's why some communicators are so grateful and others are so brilliant. There are some people who have this ability to be able to assert themselves, either to assert their personality so it so strongly comes over, or to lose their personality and assume the personality of themselves as they were in a previous incarnation and make themselves felt and understood in communication. Do you know that nearly all the best guides and the best workers in the medium mediums are individuals who have gone through many incarnations, people who have learned a great deal in the school of life through many incarnations, and people who themselves have become strong personalities. Oh, you will find this throughout the whole history of communication of spiritualism, and much further back before it was known as spiritualism. But all communicating entities who had a work to do or some special service to give through an instant have all been like that. And it is the weaker entities, the people who are inexperienced, often those who have had little knowledge and little experience, not just in communicating, I mean, but little knowledge and experience in life, or who have not perhaps in some instances, not all, but some instances, have not developed very far, or it may well be that some souls have never felt the draw of earth, they never have felt the desire to come back, or they have never taken on any specific work that they may like to do in regard to earth, in service. And you do get these cells who in themselves are not good communicators. Some are brilliant communicators. And when I refer to those cells as we term guides, I should imagine that the vast majority are very old cells. I mean, take Mickey, Capstu's child. He has a tremendously strong personality. He's a remarkable communicator and a remarkable cell for many, many aspects, because he's a very old and very experienced cell. Capstu speaks as a child, but his knowledge is tremendous. And of course, although he asserts the Mickey individuality or personality, that is only his last incarnation, it's only his last old self. But when people understand him, when they realize what he really is, and then they touch, as it were, the deeper self,
yes,
he can then be most informative, and he can then assume some other aspect of himself. Which is quite extraordinary. I mention all these things in the hope that it may give you some little insight into our work and how we go about it and the complexities of it and the reasons why some people are such better communicators. By this I don't want you to think that those who do not manifest well are necessarily backward people, or that they're not necessarily spiritually advanced. Your mother, for instance, I know you're thinking about.
Yes.
Your mother is a very, very developed soul.
It's an extraordinary thing that she can't speak. She used to speak through another medium, you know, that I used to go to. But through this one, she finds it very difficult. I wonder why that is.
Well, I don't know exactly the reason. I'm not sure of the answer to this. But I do know this. Although your mother may not manifest very well or come, or she comes very seldom, it certainly is not because she has not progressed. I possibly think in her case it may well be that it is because she has progressed.
Yes.
And she does not necessarily feel the pull of the earth. It isn't that she doesn't show interest in
it,
I'm sure she does. But I think she feels that your knowledge regarding the subject is quite considerable, and you are very well assured of the continuation of life. And I'm sure she realizes that eventually, when you are together, you'll find that happiness that is alluded to, the happiness that you seek, and I think that she fully realizes that it, in a sense, and I don't misunderstand this, in a sense it isn't important.
I see.
I think she realizes that you receive constant communication and informative communication, that you've gone well past the seeking for personal proof and evidence, that you're much more interested in philosophy and teachings,
yes,
that you're much more concerned in finding out aspects of truth which are more important to you than, in a sense, personal context or evidential values. And I think she realizes that you are getting that now and again, and others probably can do it better than she can. I think she feels that.
Oh, well. Well, but that must please her. She must be happy about that.
And also, let's face it, although we cannot perhaps always understand, certainly when in the body it's more difficult to understand, your mother realizes that you are an old soul, and that although she was your mother in your last incarnation, and she has been close to you in other ways, in other incarnations, she realizes that the blood relationship, or the fact of being your mother and you being her daughter, in itself is not as important as it might seem, just would seem, shall we say, to a lot of people. You see, the link between you and your mother is no more strong more important, can I put it like that, without giving you any, I hope, wrong impression, but no more important than, shall we say, your link with me, or your link with your brother, or your link at times in other incarnations of the medium.
Yes.
You see, we must, we're going to understand. If we are going to understand truly what incarnations mean, we must rid ourselves of the ideas that relationships, physical, material relationships, in themselves are important. What is important are the spiritual relationships.
Yes, I know.
You understand what I mean, don't you?
I beg
you follow what I mean?
I follow you, yes, exactly.
Because I've also done, if you accept the fact that you have been many people in different incarnations, then it gradually must become a realization that the links that are forged in various incarnations between oneself and others are important only because of their spiritual value, not because of their material value or their material significance.
No, I know that. I know that perfectly well.
I don't want to decry or misinterpret physical relationships because they are important. But what is important is not the fact that, shall we say, a person has been married to a man who's a woman who's been married to a man for 40 years and been extremely happy and they have much in common and they are very much in love. I'm not saying that that is not important. But what is important is not the fact that their marriage or their relationship as such. It is what they have become individually through the experiences of that union and the development that has accrued from it.
Yes.
Of course, in that, when you are born, you do not ask to be born. Neither do you ask, if it were possible, that you want a certain person as your mother or your father. The accident, if you like, although in a sense it isn't an accident, but the physical aspect of being born, the child has no say in the matter at all. You see, we must get the conception of these things clear before we can ever begin to understand what incarnations mean.
But when the child, when the spirit wants, desires to be reborn, does it know exactly what? How it's going to be reborn, with whom and so on? Is he quite unconscious of what is going to happen?
Look, child, how am I going to explain almost the inexplicable, but still. When a person dies, they, as it seems, go to sleep in your world.
Yeah.
And they wake up in another. There is a period of there is a condition or there is a period of time, although in a sense I don't want to use that word again, but there is a period when you are unconscious.
Yes.
And then again, when you are born, you have no previous knowledge of where you came from. And indeed, it is not until perhaps you are a year or two old that you begin to take an active interest in things around you, you begin to understand what things are, you gradually learn, as children do, who is mommy and who is daddy and who is this and who is that. You see the gradual progression or the development of the individual is a slow, very slow process. And you do not know any more now. At your age, you don't really know what I'm telling you. You do not know where you came from, or what, if you accept in reincarnation, or what you were previously until you've been told, and then you have to take that on faith.
I know, you don't know why you're on the earth when you're born on the earth. just don't know anything about you when you're on the other side, before you are reborn.
You see, people always say about incarnations and reincarnation in particular, well, we don't think it can be so, or if it is so, why don't we remember? It's a common cry of people who do not accept incarnations and reincarnation. And the whole point is that you must realize that there is this time which elapses before you are born into a new body, and there is this period of unconsciousness, if you like, and in consequence, when you're born, once you are in a body, you have to develop and evolve in a material sense, and gradually your consciousness begins to become aware of material things, but it is not conscious of things that have gone before. There are people who say, oh yes, I remember a previous incarnation when I was so and so and so and so, and they would tell you this and they would tell you that. I'm not suggesting that they're not speaking the truth, but there is a sense, with exceptional cases, that this may not be so, there are exceptions, but the vast majority of people who say they remember previous incarnations, they may have impressions and thoughts, and incidents may come into their mind, but they are not what they themselves remember. They are what they have been given by souls from this side who knew them in a previous incarnation and who keep in touch with them in their present incarnation, endeavoring to help them in whatever way they can, particularly if they've got some specific work to do or unfolding to make, and they try from this side to give them, by mental process, past remembrances and images. But the individual on earth who has been reborn and has reached an adult stage, who believes in reincarnation, does not themselves remember. It is what has been given to them from an outside source such as ourselves. There are exceptional cases where you get a child, and often children are extremely psychic and extremely sensitive, and are in some cases more perceptive in regarding these things. You have some classic cases where a young child, or an older person for that matter, has been able to tell about their parents who are possibly still living on earth, because rebirth doesn't necessarily mean thousands of years have to elapse. In some instances, it's almost instantaneous from leaving your earth to be born again. These are exceptional cases, and there we come again to another what could be considered an evidentiary point, where only you get evidence, real evidence that you can call tangible evidence from a material point of view in regard to reincarnation, it is almost invariably a child or a young person who can remember their parents and the names and possibly the name of the street where they lived. And there are some classic cases, but you must remember that this is a rebirth immediately, within a matter of hours, and the consciousness of the past is so strong that it retains and remains. That when the child begins to develop, say to the age of 6 or 7, they start prattling about aunt so-and-so or so-and-so, and used to live here and so on, that the present parents are so curious and so fascinated, they feel we must find out if there's anything in this. And in consequence, they go with the child, they take the child to a long distance, and the child, by its past memory, which is so recent, perhaps only a matter of 7 or 8 years previously when they died, before they were reborn, they go to the actual place and they recognize people and places and so on. These cases are exceptional and rare. But these are the clear classic cases, and they're done deliberately from this side, where possible, occasionally to prove the truth of incarnations. But these are exceptions. The average person may perhaps have a lapse of 100 years, or more or less, before they return to Earth, because they have to assimilate sometimes information and knowledge on this side to take back to Earth, or to make it possible for them at a later stage to do some specific work in conjunction with or in cooperation with souls on this side. There are many reasons and many complications, in a sense, which we cannot explain. But these classic cases of incarnations, of where people have gone back to the past life and met again relations still existing and referred to them in such a way and described this, that and the other, invariably, in fact I should say nearly in every instance, they have been children.
Ah, in my case, for instance, I was told. Now, I was born in 1887, and Mari died in 1896. Now, how was it possible for me, Mari, or me, I don't understand, to take on another body? I've never been able to understand that, and I've never had an opportunity to ask, and now I'm asking you, Dr. Fair. The years of...
This, of course, is a case which would be extremely puzzling. Then again, something which possibly you have never thought of.
Yes.
And even if you had, you wouldn't be able to comprehend it any more than you'd probably be able to comprehend it certainly now. That there are classic cases,
yes,
of a soul utilizing two earthly bodies at the same time.
At the same time?
Yes. Particularly if one entity, that is a physical body,
yes,
of an individual is reaching a certain age, went through the sickness or illness, they may be able to release themselves in a new life, even before physically, as the world understands it, they did. The same as, of course, it is common, as you probably know, it is common for people in India, particularly a country which you've been well associated with, for these men to go into trance states for 3 or 4 days and transport themselves at long distances and be seen and be felt and be spoken to, and sometimes even to animate another person. You know, there are many things which are mysterious, which are inexplicable to the human brain. There are many things in Eastern religions which, well, are so fantastic from the Western's point of view, and even to some extent from the Eastern's point of view. We know of these truths. You see, once you can rid yourself of the idea that the physical body in itself is the important part of man, it is in a sense the least important part of man. What is important is the spirit that animates all life, and a spirit can animate more than one body.
Oh, and that's what must have happened to me.
Your formative years were not as they were for no purpose, you know.
Were not what?
Of no purpose.
Oh.
You probably are puzzled by certain things, but I knew a long time ago that you would be.
That's puzzled to me tremendously. And I know, well, my mother, when she spoke to me once through this medium, she said, when I was a little child, I used to say very strange things. But she couldn't get any further to tell me what strange things were.
Child, I could tell you a lot of things. I know a lot of things that can be difficult to explain and be understood. If you know your Hessenlicks, I'm not saying this is in your case, but there are some strange personalities in your world and have been through generations of time, the split personalities, the dual personalities. You've heard the fantastic, fabulous story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yes.
And this does exist. There are people who who, although they are one body, are animated by two spirits.
Yes, yes.
And as you know, you have seen it, you've known of it with people, perhaps you haven't fully quite in this way. Because, in a sense, you can equally say in truth that all people are strange mixtures. There's much good and much bad. So in that sense, but I'm not referring to that sense in regard to some people, there are some people who are obviously animated by two entities.
Yes.
I'm not saying this is a good thing. Mind you, it's often a very bad thing.
Yes. Yes. Those are
you see, and you've got quirks.
Yes.
In human beings, that is what I mean by that is physical ones.
Yes.
Take two children that are born of a mother that are joined together.
Yes.
There are two entities, but they both may be animated by one spirit.
Yes, I see.
And when one is separated from the other, invariably,
one dies.
You see, there are many, actually, I wish people could realize this, and it's very difficult to make people understand, even spiritualists, even those who profess to understand spiritual truths, but there is, with the physical and the spiritual, a balance. You look at human beings, and it's very rare you can see it. In fact, you must often say, this person is a pure and absolute materialist, but even the worst, there is a spiritual, it may not be balanced in as much as they are spiritually balanced in the sense that we would like, but there is a spiritual force and influence, which, perhaps given a different set of circumstances, a different background, a different life, could be different. But you see, we must remember that in a sense, we are not only animating the body, we're not that which in which we exist, but to a great extent we are responsible not only for the bodily functions and the bodily actions and the bodily thoughts, but we are responsible for many things of which we often have little or no knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
This may strike you, perhaps you don't quite follow completely what I'm trying to get at.
No, I don't quite understand that. How it is possible not to have knowledge for things that you are responsible for?
Oh yeah, these riddles, how can one explain them?
Never mind, Dr. Dear.
You see, the average person.
Yes.
Even a religious person. No matter how religious they may well be, and there are many people who are sincerely religious, and I respect them, but the point is that in spite of that, they are still 99% material, with only 1% of the spirit.
Yes.
You see, it's easy, and this gives it another way. There are a lot of people who do good deeds, good works, and in many ways are very good themselves. They're not necessarily people who go to church, they're not necessarily people who are interested in spiritual things, because they do things which, as they see them, are animated purely by motives, what they call decent motives within themselves.
Yeah.
But what they don't realize is that what is animating them is a spiritual force or power that is within them, that is the real self expressing itself. The religious person, he assumes when he does something very good that it is his religion or his religious convictions or his religious beliefs, and in some instances through fear, for instance, they will do certain things because they think if they don't do that they'll pay a price. Of course we have this so often with our Catholic friends who are not necessarily good in themselves, but through fear they often do things which they feel they must do, not because they're animated by goodness or the power of the spirit within them, but they do it through a sort of fear. so much is done by fear.
Yeah.
And anything that is done by fear is not animated purely by spiritual desire. Although the action may be a good one and benefit someone, it doesn't really benefit the person who does it. Do you understand that?
Oh, yes, I do.
For instance, if you, through some strong religious persuasion, shall we say, if you, shall we say, for life, for example, say you were a Catholic, and you had such strong religious convictions that you had to do certain things, otherwise, if you didn't, you'd suffer the consequence, you would do it, not because you wanted to do it, but because your inner spirit and your real self, the better self, said you must do it, and it's a good thing to do because you want to do it. In other words, it's a natural sequence of events that you want to do good. If you do it through fear, though the action in itself may be a good one, it hasn't benefited you because you haven't done it with the right motive and the right spirit.
Yes.
That's why we on this side are not against religions as such, but we are against religion. Certain aspects and certainly organized religion, because we know that people are not developing naturally of their own true selves. They're doing something that's forced upon them through fear. Many people will give large sums of money, for instance, to the church. They're not doing it necessarily, there may be a few here and there, because they necessarily love the church, or because they are particularly enamored indeed of the church. But they're doing it as a sort of almost an insurance policy. They feel, well, if I'm on the right side of the church and I'm benefiting the church, and the church says it's true, which it may well be, then I should be all right. We must never do anything. I told you this, and I told hundreds of people this, that we must never do something because we feel we must do it, or we do it because if we don't do it, we should suffer the consequences, or we do it because, well, it's considered the right thing to do. Unless we do something with the fullness of heart and the desire, deep desire, through love, to be of service to someone in some way or other, unless we do it with the right motive. In other words, unless it is animated by the spirit that animates us, then it is nullified. It's not the same thing. That's why in all these things that I try to tell you, whether I come as a citizen, or whether I come as myself, or whatever I endeavour to do, not only with you, but for others, I always tried to make people realise that they themselves must do whatever they do, truly from within themselves, for the sheer love of doing something that is good, because the urge and the desire to do it is truly of themselves. We may point the way, it's the same story that one's repeated often, we may point the way, we may sometimes make suggestions, we never make demands, we never make commands, we wouldn't have the right to do it, we wouldn't if we could. The whole point is that we say to people, do what you feel within yourself is the right thing to do, what your spirit urges you to do. Don't do it because we say so, and do it only if you feel, otherwise it is of no value.
Yes, how many times you've told me that. Yes.
So many people come to this meeting in particular to have sittings, and they ask various questions. Often, of course, they ask for advice on certain material problems, which sometimes we give them because we want to help them if we can. But very few, very, very few, are sincerely and genuinely interested in bettering themselves in a spiritual sense. They are not animated by the true spiritual desire for spiritual knowledge and progression. They bring themselves, even when they come to talk to us, on a low material level, which has been so destroyed, you might say, one would use that term, in this sense, for the medium, I feel sure, and certainly for us. And that's why, when we find, as we do on rare occasions, someone like yourself who is sincerely and genuinely interested in true spiritual knowledge, and experience. It's as if, well, as if the door has been flung wide open to us, and we take full advantage of it. And if, in the process of doing this, over the years there have been some disappointments, of course, but if in the process sometimes I've had to withhold my identity, it's because I felt that it